It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's currently 40 degrees. We're looking for rain and snow showers before 6 p.m., then rain and snow between 9 p.m. and midnight, and snow after midnight tonight. Coming up on the Midday News, Alaska's Board of Fish doesn't have the money for its planned doubling up of meetings. More news about the emergency F-16 landing in Bethel last year. A devastating fire in Chivac. And in Skagway, they hosted the annual Buckwheat Cross-Country Ski Classic. We learn about that. All that and more after national headline news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Nearly $2 trillion in additional coronavirus relief is a step closer to reaching President Biden's desk for his signature. The U.S. House is gearing up for a final vote. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports the measure, which has gained no support from congressional Republicans, is expected to pass along party lines.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calls the bill historic and transformative, adding that it will go a long way in helping American families.
This legislation addresses the inequality of how health care and the vaccine and all the rest would be distributed. All of it excellent. All of it fair. All of it an opportunity for us to grow the economy by investing in the people. For the people.
The relief measure includes another round of stimulus checks for Americans who qualify, an extension of extra weekly unemployment benefits, and additional federal aid for state and local governments. Democrats hold a narrow majority in the House and cannot afford many votes against the bill. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
The Pentagon's expected to approve a two-month extension of the National Guard's mission at the U.S. Capitol, where thousands of troops were deployed in response to the January 6th insurrection. With a threat of more violence, about half of the 5,000 troops initially deployed are likely to remain in place. Jury selection is underway in the criminal trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin for his role in the death of George Floyd last year. NPR's Adrian Florida reports on what both sides face as they struggle to seat an impartial jury.
Both sides are very sensitive to the role of race in this case. The attorney for Derek Chauvin has been asking jurors about their views on Black Lives Matter, on Blue Lives Matter, on the protests that have erupted in the last year over racial justice. We've seen just one juror seated this morning. They've got a seat 12 and four alternates, and so it's going to take some time. 3 weeks have been set aside for this task.
NPR's Adrian Florido. Buckingham Palace breaks its silence. Queen Elizabeth II responding to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's interview with Oprah Winfrey. Elliot Hannon reports the palace issued a statement after nearly 2 days of outrage over the couple's charges of racism within the royal family.
After the interview aired in the UK Monday night, morning radio talk shows were alight with speculation about what it all meant for the monarchy. Everyone had an opinion, it seemed, except for the royal family itself. That ended Tuesday when Buckingham Palace issued a four-sentence statement from the Queen. The whole family is saddened to learn the full extent of how challenging the last few years have been for Harry and Meghan, the Queen's statement reads. She added, "The issues raised, particularly that of race, are concerning. While some recollections may vary, they are taken very seriously and will be addressed by the family privately." For NPR News, I'm Elliot Hannon in London.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Alaska's Board of Fisheries has bumped its meeting cycle back a year after cost concerns and public outcry. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, commercial fishing interests had raised concerns that a packed schedule wouldn't give stakeholders a fair amount of time with the board.
Alaska's Board of Fish is a seven-member board of citizens appointed by the governor. They make critical decisions about the whos, whats, and whens of access to the state's fisheries. COVID-19 caused Board of Fish meetings to be postponed, including its regional meeting for Southeast. In January, the board voted to cram 2 years' worth of meetings into the next meeting cycle. That would have effectively doubled the amount of meetings this year. The vast majority of public and advisory committee comments received in recent months raised concerns about the doubled schedule. On Monday, the Dunleavy administration also weighed in. Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang says his agency does not have the budget for twice the meeting load.
So right now, we do not have money to double up on in-person meetings next year. I can tell you it's my intent not to rob Peter to pay Paul to double up on meetings, because I'm not going to dig into the department budget at $500,000 to fund those meetings.
Regional management areas around the state hold Board of Fish meetings once every 3 years. The Board of Fish voted unanimously to walk back the doubled schedule, instead pushing the whole meeting cycle back a year. Board of Fish member Mackenzie Mitchell of Fairbanks says recent feedback and cost considerations had led to the change of heart.
With new information that's presented itself and the overwhelming public comment that doesn't support holding, doubling up on the meeting cycles, that I think reconsideration and a conversation should be had, especially with the important factor that we don't have the financial support to be able to fully conduct those meetings.
But a delay in board meetings also means a delay in board action. The Chignik Intertribal Coalition and Chignik's Board of Fish Advisory Committee were among the only comments requesting that the schedule stay doubled. Chignik's Board of Fish meeting would have happened this cycle. Ben Allen is the vice chair of Chignik's advisory committee. He explained that the Alaska Peninsula community's early and late sockeye runs have been dropping for at least 3 years. King salmon in the region also haven't been showing up. He says Chignik needs the Board of Fish to take action to try and save their salmon runs.
Our communities have dropped away from the idea of generally having an income to now we're just trying to make sure that the run doesn't die off. And so this has turned into a full-blown conservation issue at this point.
While the board unanimously reversed the condensed 2021 meeting schedule, board members, including John Wood of Willow, did express concern about delayed action for the Alaska Peninsula community of 70 people.
I would ask the department to take a look at Chignik's concerns about their fish not returning and see what the status is with that argument, whether indeed they may have a valid request to have a stock of concern designation on those and perhaps get back with us and let us know what they find in that regard.
The board will still hold 5 meetings during the 2021 to 2022 meeting cycle. The board also extended regulatory deadlines for 3 Southeast fisheries due to pandemic-related issues with meeting, and it approved use of a toxic chemical to kill invasive northern pike in a watershed on the Kenai Peninsula. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
New emerging technology promises to transform the level of internet service provided in remote Alaska. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the need for better internet access in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta has never been more urgent. KYUK's Greg Kim has this report.
Earl Atchuk, a traditional mask maker in Chivac, says he normally pays around $350 a month for internet access.
But sometimes that can almost double.
In Chivac, 100 gigabytes of internet service from United Utilities Incorporated cost $300 a month. That's before the steep price of going over that limit. Where Atchuk lives, the cost of his internet is a third of the average person's income. But Atchuk said he doesn't see any other option than to continue paying. That's because during the COVID-19 pandemic, while villages are locked down, he still needs to see his family. He still needs to sell his artwork.
When we need to communicate with our children, when we need that FaceTime, when we need to sell a product online, when we need to make a ticket to our hospital appointment in Anchorage, who cares that we're paying double? They can charge us whatever they want, and it's not even fair.
UUI is a subsidiary of GCI, which built the network that provides internet service for nearly all of Western Alaska. GCI spokesperson Heather Handyside said the high price of internet service in this region is because the network was so expensive to build. She said the project, which started in 2010 and completed in 2017, cost GCI almost $300 million out of its own pocket, in addition to a $44 million government subsidy.
that's a huge investment to connect those 45,000 people.
Other YK Delta residents say the high cost of internet access is not even the main problem. In some cases, no matter how much people are willing to pay, they can't access the internet. In December, Akiachuk Limited, a company that provides electricity, fuel, groceries, and check cashing for its village, reached its 100 gigabyte limit with UUI. President Jason George said the company was using more data because it was holding its meetings online due to the pandemic. The company was able to pay overage fees to use another 25 gigabytes, but after that, George said the internet stopped working.
I don't see why they have to shut off the internet, because we pay our bills every month and they should know that.
Handyside said the internet is not actually ever shut off, but she said after customers in certain communities buy an extra $200 of data on top of their monthly package, they're limited from purchasing anymore until the next month, and their internet is slow to 512 kilobytes per second. That's 20 times slower than normal service in Akiachuk and nearly 2,000 times slower than what GCI offers in Anchorage. George said at that speed, it's essentially the same as being shut off.
You just couldn't even get a page loading.
For the last week in December, George's company had to relearn how to do everything without the internet. Employees couldn't email vendors that Akiachuk Limited buys from. Credit card transactions had to go through the phone line, which took minutes instead of seconds. Plus, the company's end-of-year accounting process was delayed. John Wallace runs a company that provides IT support for Akiachuk Limited and other small companies and tribes in Western Alaska.
The internet has become a lifeline for business. Internet now is like electricity.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, the Federal Communications Commission approved a subsidy for households that are low income or live on Native American land to help pay for internet access. But Wallace says that doesn't help companies like Akiachuk Limited that can easily run through its allotment of high-speed internet and are unable to purchase more.
It may cost you less, but you still don't have internet.
Handyside, GCI's spokesperson, says that imposed internet slowdowns are due to technology limitations in remote Alaska. In metropolitan areas like Anchorage, customers can connect to the internet through fiber optic cables, which can transport huge amounts of data very quickly. But Handyside said fiber hasn't reached many remote parts of Alaska.
When you get further out and you can't build fiber, either because of the distance or the costs or the heavily regulated lands that are, you know, surrounding a lot of rural Alaska, you have to, you know, have a different strategy.
And that strategy is using microwaves. Handyside explained GCI's network of over 100 towers in Western Alaska use microwaves to relay internet signals from villages back to places that are connected to fiber internet.
Microwave is also very fast, but the capacity can be limited. In some communities, especially the more remote communities, we simply don't have additional capacity available to provide.
Some companies are now promising to add additional internet capacity in places like remote Alaska. Those solutions don't use microwave towers or the fiber optic network, but use new kinds of satellites. And they may be coming as soon as this year. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
A fire has demolished Chivac's old school building, damaging power and sewer lines and destroying a community dream. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur has this report.
It was just after midnight, in the early hours of Monday morning, when Mary Pingayak was in bed, trying to fall asleep. Outside, the wind was blowing over 40 miles per hour, when suddenly it began howling.
And when I went outside, I was checking to see what's going on. I saw the flames. I couldn't believe my eyes. It was orange, and the fire was growing, and it looked like it would spread.
In the center of the village, Chivac's old school building was on fire. Across town, Chivac Vice Mayor Ulrich Ulron woke up to a phone call from his uncle with the news and then raced to the fire.
There was absolutely nothing we could do. The flames were already so big in the gym, the whole old school gym section was burning.
About 25 yards away stood the public safety building. The flames began charring the walls.
We had to have our guys hose down the side of the public safety, even though the heat was so tremendous.
Bystanders also stood ready to hose down the nearby traditional council building. While flames quickly consumed the entire school, the fire never spread to another structure.
The south winds were in our favor.
North of the burning school lay a frozen lake. All night, the wind blew the flames towards the lake, partially melting the ice. Also in the flames' path were electrical wires.
Those wires caught on fire and snapped in half.
For the next dozen hours, sections of the town had intermittent power and phone service. A line crew temporarily fixed the wires. The electric utility AVEC, the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, contacted a team in Tuksuk Bay to deploy to Chivac to provide a permanent fix once the weather cleared. Also, the fire destroyed a sewer line that services Ulron's neighborhood, knocking out the suction that pulls the sewage down the pipe.
My tub is overflowing and I can't drain any water in my sink or flush my toilet because it'll just back up into my tub.
Ulron called the city and was told the repairs might take weeks.
So I'm going to have to go back to the honey buckets for now.
The damaged sewer line services the school, and the superintendent canceled classes on Monday until the problem could be better understood. The old school building burned quickly, collapsing within an hour of the flames becoming visible. By sunrise, only smoldering remains lay in the snow. The cause of the fire is under investigation. No one was injured. The building was a total loss.
It's very unfortunate and it's very devastating. I mean, we had really big plans for it.
Richard Tulik is mayor of Chivac. For 8 years, the city and tribe had been laying plans to turn the old school into a community center.
We had met before with the community, and they came up with ideas, putting a library, a teen center, a place for cultural activities, things like bingo.
And basketball in a community gym. The school shut down in 2005 when a new school opened to accommodate Chivac's growing population. The old school, built decades ago, needed to be cleaned of toxins like asbestos before it could reopen as a community center. The city planned to apply for cleanup funds. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Over the weekend, Skagway hosted its annual Buckwheat Cross-Country Ski Race, named for the late, great Skagway mainstay, Carlin Buckwheat Donahue. As with most everything in the time of COVID, the event took on a much different shape this year. KHNS's Mike Swayze has this report.
All right, 3, 2, 1, oh!
And so began the 35th annual cross-country ski race known as the Buckwheat.
Right.
This year, deemed the Buckwheat COVID Classic. Every year, this race brings together communities from all over the North to celebrate the coming spring and revel in the last of long winter's offerings. This year, with the Canadian border closed and travel mandates firmly in place, the race served as a reminder that Skagway still knows how to throw a party.
And I was not trying to win at all.
That makes it even better.
But on the last lap, when he stopped, he got iced. And he was putting in his backpack at the aid station. As I pulled up to the aid station, I was like, what is Ryan doing putting on a backpack right now?
I was like, I'm on a party at the end, and I need my warm clothes.
And I was like, I think I'm actually going to catch up with him.
That was the triathlon winner Brooke Jasky-Zuber and runner-up Ryan Hickel. Other participants thought they had a shot this year, but far too many underestimated the tenacious Skagway phenom. I caught up with Tom Parker just before the race and asked him if he thought he could win.
Well, it's not that I plan on it, it's just an eventuality. Much like the heat death of our universe, it's just going to happen.
There were multiple races to enter this year, the triathlon, the biathlon, and the kids' races, the premier race being the triathlon, which started with a foot race at Skagway's Lower Dewey Trailhead, followed by 3 laps around the lake for a full 10K, plus a new twist this year, the rifle shot. No actual guns were used. They were just paintball guns. How accurate were the paintball guns?
Terribly inaccurate. Right now, looking from here, I only see one orange dot on a target, and that was when they were warming up and getting it set up.
That was race organizer and longtime Log Cabin Ski Society contributor Corey Thole. If the shooters missed the target, which almost every participant did, they had to do a short penalty lap. The town came out in force, hiking up the icy Lower Dewey Trail or catching a ride on a chopper provided by Temsco helicopters to family or friendship bubbles of five or less. People brought camping chairs, music, party hats. There was even a man-sized banana staffing the aid station at the north end of the lake, offering chocolate, Tang, or something stronger for the older crowd.
Right, up the hill, is that right?
Yep, up the hill, through the trees.
Go through the trees, baby.
There was a burger and hot dog feed, and then the grand finale. The burning of the giant wooden coronavirus. Were the organizers worried the fire would melt a hole through the 3-foot layer of ice on the lake?
We figure, since this thing is going to be lit up and send all that good energy off, it is pretty large. It might create a big hole in the ice at some point. And so there's a couple fishing rods up here, and it's going to be warm with the fire, so Hawaiian shirts and fishing poles. Just in case. Be prepared.
Roughly 2/3 of Skagway residents have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. And though some, like this reporter, missed the revelry downtown after the event, it seems the burning of the giant coronavirus was more than just simply symbolic. Reporting from a rejuvenated and optimistic Skagway, I'm Mike Swayze.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. How much did Alaska fishermen and processors pay for COVID costs? And did they get relief funds? More after this.
Halibut and black cod buyers and sellers, simplify your sales online from one location at the Seafood Auction. Visit seafoodauction.net.
Alaska fishermen and processors can share ground truth in a short survey about how much they paid out of pocket over the past year for COVID-related costs and how much relief they got from government programs. It's information that's not available elsewhere, according to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, which is conducting the survey with McKinley Research Group. Processors are being asked about financial losses due to COVID mitigation efforts caused by plant closures and employment changes. Also, costs for things such as charter flights and hotel put-ups for worker quarantines, plus plant modifications, protective equipment, medical and testing supplies, and other related services. Many fishermen also paid for similar coverages for their crews. Permit holders are being asked about the financial impacts of the pandemic, their hiring levels in 2020 compared to 2019, and their estimates for anticipated costs in 2021. The survey also asks fishermen whether the pandemic has caused them to sell or buy permits, boats, or other assets, reduce crew, stop fishing entirely, or make other changes to their operations. Both processors and fishermen also are being asked whether COVID relief payments covered their 2020 losses. The surveys are open through March 18th. Also, a series of briefing papers is available as part of ASME and McKinley's ongoing work to understand and report on COVID impacts. The January brief describes COVID impacts to global freight costs, how a surplus of frozen farmed salmon is causing uncertainty for wild salmon markets, and the anticipated hits to tax revenues for coastal communities in 2021. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the ninth day of March, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:41. It will set again at 7:01, giving us 11 hours and 20 minutes of daylight. That is a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record low for this day was set in 1966 and 71, and a record high, that's of zero, and a record high of 49 was set in 62, 63, and 83. And that's the one that's most at risk right now, as we are sitting at 43 degrees right now. We're looking for showers for the rest of the afternoon, south wind to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, rain and snow showers before 9 p.m., then rain and snow between 9 p.m. and midnight, turning to just plain snow after midnight. Low of about 33 tonight, southeast wind to 10 miles per hour, will become west after midnight and could gust as high as 20. New snow accumulation of less than a half an inch is all they're calling for tonight. For tomorrow, 40% chance of snow before 9, then mostly cloudy skies, gradually becoming sunny skies tomorrow afternoon with a high near 37. West wind to 25 miles per hour, could gust as high as 35 tomorrow. And for Wednesday night, we're looking for mostly clear skies, low around 19. West wind to 30 miles per hour, gusting as high as 40 on Wednesday night. Sunny skies on Thursday as well. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up on the east side at 5:57 p.m. That will be a minus 0.2 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 12:35 a.m. of 6.9 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5:49 a.m. of 2.8 feet, followed by a high tide here on the east side at 11:52 a.m. tomorrow of 8.8 feet. Over on the west side, these are Euganic Pass tides. You have a low tide coming up at 6:25 this evening of 0.2 feet, followed by a high tide at 12:49 a.m. of 13.4 feet. Your next low tide on the west side will be at 6:34 a.m. of 3.5 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow afternoon on the west side will be at 12:30 p.m. and be 14.3 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiakon waters and Cook Inlet. A front over the western Gulf will persist through today. A 1,006 millibar low, 200 nautical miles south of Sitkanak, will move this afternoon to the North Gulf and go to 995 millibars Wednesday morning. As a result, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, gale warning on Wednesday, south winds to 20 knots, seas to 10 feet right now. For tonight, south winds to 20 knots will turn to the west and go to 30 knots after midnight, seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, here on the east side, west wind to 35 knots, seas to 12 feet. And for tomorrow night, west wind to 40 knots, seas to 13 feet. Over on our west side in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for Wednesday as well. South wind to 15 knots right now will turn to the north this afternoon, seas to 4 feet. For tonight in the Shelikof, northeast wind to 15 knots will turn to the northwest to 30 knots after midnight, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, northwest 35, seas to 8 feet. Tomorrow night, west 35 in the Shelikof, seas to 8 feet. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session tonight in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room at 7:30 p.m. The meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For more information, call the clerk at 486-8636. The Historic Preservation Commission will hold a meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 12:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. This meeting is also open to the public. For agenda and web streaming links, go to the City of Kodiak website and or call the clerk at 486-8636. There will be a Board of Education and Kodiak Island Borough Assembly joint work session during the Borough Assembly work session on Thursday. The Assembly work session will begin at 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Volunteer Fire Department. The Borough's Assembly work session agenda packet and web streaming information can be accessed at the Borough's website, and the packet for the joint work session can be viewed on Board Docs at the borough's website. For more information, contact Bianca Clark, Secretary to the Board of Education, at 486-7566. Well, three seats are up for election for the Kodiak Electric Association's Board of Directors. The deadline for filing petitions is March 10th, 2021, so you have till tomorrow. Candidate petition packets are available by contacting the KEA office. That number is 486-7709. To be an eligible candidate, you must be a member of KEA, and completed candidate petition packets must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, March 10th, at the KEA office, the one at 1614 Mill Bay Road.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 1220. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.